Based on hundreds of millions of real-world tests, the experts at Ookla Speedtest have spoken. T-Mobile is now the best mobile network in America. So you can keep up with all the MLB action from the ballpark to the backcountry because they've got the most advanced 5G, the most towers, and a signal that goes farther than ever. Oh, and did I mention the largest satellite-to-mobile network? They're way ahead making sure that the fans experience every pitch, play, and post-game moment. So whether you're streaming the game out and about, checking stats on the road, or experiencing ballpark perks with Magenta status, you're ready to stay connected wherever your fandom takes you. Head over to T-Mobile.com/network to switch to the best network. For baseball fans, it's better over here. Based on analysis by Ookla of Speedtest Intelligence, data first half 2025, compatible device and plan required for T-Satellite. See details at T-Mobile.com.
Lowe's knows tough jobs call for tougher tools. The new DeWalt Elite Series power tool accessories are built to last for the pro who doesn't stop. With precision fitment, durability, and impact resistance, finishing jobs faster has never been easier. Shop the new DeWalt Elite Series at an everyday low price exclusively at Lowe's. We help, you save.
Welcome to The Tool Shed, a podcast covering all aspects of fantasy baseball to help you win all of your fantasy leagues. From the MLB draft all the way to the show, we're here to help give you the edge in your dynasty leagues. Now, here are your hosts, Eric Cross and Chris Clegg.
Welcome into another episode of The Tool Shed with Clegg and Cross, brought to you by Rotoballer. This is episode 300. Thank you for joining us. I'm your host, Eric Cross. And with me, as usual, is my 80 gray co-host, Mr. Chris Clegg. Chris, how's it going, bud?
It's good. I can't believe we made it to 300. That's wild. It's been a really fun ride. Feels like we're just getting started. A little better every day. Man, we will be at 500 before we know it. It does feel like that we're probably on that trajectory to hit 500. In the next year and a half, maybe, and then who knows, maybe episode 1,000. I think we calculated at one point. I don't remember when the date was, but it's coming. We're going to hit it, but 300 is a big milestone, and that's it's really good. So very honored. Thanks to all the listeners that make this possible.
Yeah, I think we've been right like under 100 per year over the last couple of years. Yeah, we'll probably get to 500 at some point around maybe preseason 2026, something like that, and 1,000, who knows when that'll be. But yeah, 300 is crazy. We've been doing this podcast now for about 3.5 years. Started October 2020. Now it's April of 2024. Time flies when you're having fun. But here's to the next 300. And we got a lot of great names on the docket today for our 300th episode. What a fun major leaguers, minor leaguers, good mix of players here today. But before we get into the show, the usual housekeeping. You can follow us on Twitter. Chris is at RotoClegg. I am at EricCross04. Show is at ToolShedPod. If you enjoy this podcast, please rate and review. Make sure you check out both of our personal platforms, thedynastydugout.com and toolshedfantasy.com for more work from each of us. And of course, you got to check out all the great things going on over at RotoBaller, from content to tools. There's so much great stuff going on over at RotoBaller to help you win and have fun this fantasy season. Use the code TOOLSHED, get you 10% off any premium package, baseball, basketball, football, whatever you want, over at RotoBaller.com. All right, Chris, we got to start out with a little bit of Eddie De La Cruz talk here, who has been probably the most electric player in all of baseball this year. 85 plate appearances in, already up to 6 home runs and 10 steals. Slashing 306, 412, 639. I think his 650 plate appearance pace is something like 155 runs, 42 home runs, 110 RBI, and like 80 steals or something like that. It's insane. But another great thing, though, like we knew he was capable of doing that, but he's been really just getting better at the plate. Like the quality of his plate appearances have gotten better going into today's game, here on Sunday. He only had a 17.5% K rate over like the last, I think it was 40-something plate appearances. And yeah, this is a small sample size, but still very noticeable. Had 4 walks on Saturday, all 4 plate appearances. He walked. That was really nice to see. And yeah, only has 3 strikeouts total in his last 4 games. Again, very small, but very encouraging stuff from Ellie De La Cruz. At this point, is he a top 10 dynasty asset?
He's certainly pushing that way. I don't want to crown him there yet because the top 10 is good. It's a very talented group up there. And though I think that there is the upside to be a top 5 player, I think that as I'm working through updates right now, I think he probably settles in the 15 to 20 range for me. Just a small boost. He was probably, I think, 30-ish. So it's a decent-sized jump, all things considered, that how talented at the top that group really is. Yeah, there's still some concerns with strikeouts. There's still some contact concerns. Like, we're looking at kind of bottom-tier whiff rates and contact rates. Yeah, I still have that little concern in the back of my head, but I will say that the talent, he can make it work because the power speed is legit. What I look at as the red flag is like his own contact rate 74.5%. That's really low. The overall contact rate sitting around 64%. So those numbers are, man, a little bit concerning for me. He can mash, he can run. Like, the tools are that of a top tier player for sure. But I do want to see a little more consistency. And if we get that, then I think that it's fair to say he's top 10. But right now, I can't go that high for various reasons, because I do have those concerns with contact. I think that's going to be the biggest question mark, is where does the contact fall? And can he make enough contact consistently to ride these kind of waves? Or is it the case where we see him have these peaks and also the valleys, which I don't want to, like, this isn't even a close comp at all. But I think about Javier Baez, who, you know, he always kind of did this with a poor contact. And he had seasons where he was really good. And I'm not saying that this is even close to a talent level like Javier Baez, Ellie De La Cruz. But we did see those stretches where Baez would just mash. He would have the power, he'd have speed, and he'd make it work with the low contact rates. And then we saw the fall off. So I don't think that's the case here. That just came to mind with seeing players that can have made it work with struggling contact before. As you mentioned, the strikeouts have gone down, which is good. But he also went through some stretches, you know, a couple of weeks ago where he went 4 or 5 straight games without a strikeout. And then he'd go 2 strikeouts, 2 strikeouts, 2 strikeouts, back-to-back games. So I don't know. I think Ellie's obviously a stud. He's got immense upside. I'm not ready to go top 10 on him. I'm a little more conservative given the contact skills, but I do think this is a very fun and exciting player. And right now, it's looking like he is going to pay off. Early returns are paying off the high ADP for redraft that people were panicking about. And I had 0 shares. I wasn't going to pay a top 20 ADP for him. And right now, I don't know. It's looking like he may return first round value.
Yeah, I think the only 2 redraft shares I got of Ellie were in auction format, so I didn't have to pay the ADP. Though I did, I think I paid, I want to say it was high 20, like $27, $28, $29 for him in both the auctions. It wasn't cheap, but I thought that was, you know, decent price given the upside that he has. And yeah, I don't have him top 10 yet either. He's very close. I haven't actually have him at this very second, and this could change before I put my rankings out here. I have him 12. It's right in the cluster. I can't put him 10 yet because, okay, like 8, 9, and 10 for me is Ohtani, Yordan, and Betts. I can't put him ahead of those guys yet. Then I have Michael Harris at number 11, who obviously is been phenomenal as well this season. So I can't go top 10 on him yet, but who knows? That could easily change. By the time we're doing like our June update, Ellie could be top 5. He could be right up there in the Tatis, Tucker, Soto range for sure. And maybe even gets up in the top 3 or 4. J-Rod's off to a really slow start to the season. So is Corbin Carroll. Yeah, Witt's handling his business. Acuna has been fine, just without a lot of power so far. Tatis has been good. Tucker's been good. Soto's been good. This is really hard top 10 to crack into right now. I thought this has been the top 10 for the last couple of years now with minimal change. Very hard group to break into. But yeah, I think Ellie is going to get there. And yeah, maybe the contact rates will always be a bit lower. K-rate will always probably be a bit higher, but ballpark absolutely helps. And even if he's only 260, if you're going to get like potential 40 plus, then yeah, you'll absolutely take that. And he's scoring a ton of runs, you know, driving in a lot of runs, even with a lot of the other big names in that Cincinnati lineup, either hurt, suspended, or whatever. So, yeah, I definitely think he's going to get the top 10 pretty damn soon. A couple other young players here that are really shining lately, both in Baltimore, with Jordan Westberg and Colton Cowser. Both actually have 5 home runs and 3 steals right now, so that kind of works out well. Colton Cowser made the roster, but then he was playing sporadically as the fourth outfielder, but took over Austin Hayes' spot in the starting lineup, who was really struggling, and he hasn't looked back. Again, 5 home runs, 3 steals, and just 56 plate appearances. 373, 411, 784 slash for Cowser. And for Westberg, 5 home runs, 3 steals in 80 plate appearances, 333, 392, 639 slash. And you look at the metrics for both of these guys, a lot of red on both of their Savant pages, expected metrics back up the current metrics, high quality of contact for both of them, good sprint speeds for both of them. Both are keeping the strikeout rate in check. Actually, Hauser is not 30.8%. So I was looking at Westberg, but Westberg's under 20%. And yeah, a lot of good here. So both of them rising up rankings in a hurry. Chris, what are your thoughts about these guys? Where do you have them ranked? And do you think the performance we're seeing right now from each of them is legit?
Yeah, so it's been really fun to watch both of them. And Jordan Westberg is just crazy hot. You look at this profile and he's mashing. He's up to 5 homers, 3 stolen bases so far, which has been a lot of fun. Hitting 333, 392, 639. That's over a 1,000 OPS right now. And Westberg, I think people just assumed he was like a temporary filler guy until like Mayo and some of those guys were ready. I don't think that's going to be the case. He's not going to go down without a fight. He's hitting the ball super hard. He's at 60% hard hit rate, 98th percentile right now. His average exit velocity is 93.3 miles an hour. That's good for 94th percentile among all hitters, 11% barrel rate. Running sprint speed's really good. Successful on the base paths, making contact. Like, Westberg looks the part, man. He's been looking really good. The only major flag is that he is striking out a little bit too much, but still 20%. The contact rate isn't much lower than the strikeout rate, but Westberg's making things happen when he puts the ball in play. And Cowser also, you look at the Cowser, those have been the two best hitters on the Orioles team. And Gunnar's been really good too, but both these guys have been really spectacular. Cowser has 5 homers, 3 stolen bases so far, slashing 373, 411, 784. That's an 1195 OPS. Similar profile. Cowser's not chasing. Surprisingly, he's not taking walks considering the low chase rate, but barreling like 15% of balls, 51% hard hit rate. Across the board, these guys have been stellar. And this is why you give these players chances in a dynasty league, because Cowser came up last year and he sucked in 77 plate appearances. He had 115, hey, 286, so he had a 148 slug last year when he came up in 77 plate appearances. That was not good. People were like, he sucks. He was overrated as a prospect. Westberg came up last year. He was not great either, even though he was better than Cowser. He had just 3 homers and stole 4 bases in 228 plate appearances. Hit 260 with a 311 OBP. People wrote these guys off really quick, but they were young talents that consistently proved it in the minors. And this is why you give the young guys a chance, because it's such a hard transition from AAA to the majors. Any jump from the minors to the majors is substantial. I don't think people realize how big and how hard this jump is, but we're seeing it. There's adjustment periods. It takes guys time, and they've both been a lot of fun to watch this year. It's awesome to see their resurgence and them looking really good.
Yeah, that lineup has just been red hot lately, and these two have been right at the forefront of it. Unfortunately, on the other side of it, Jackson Holliday has not. We didn't really put him on the outline, Chris, but we kind of were talking before we came on recording here. You know, after game, Holliday is now 1-for-32 in 9 games with 16 strikeouts. That's a 50% K rate, only walked twice, and has at least 1 strikeout in every game so far. Do you think there's a chance he gets sent back down? It sounds crazy to say, obviously given the talent of Jackson Holliday, but man, if this continues and maybe he does get sent back down and they bring out Mayo and do some shifting around that infield. But do you think there's that chance right now?
I think that they want him to succeed. Like it almost looks bad in a way if you almost rush the guy. He's so young. I won't say they rushed him, but you push him up. He struggles his extent, and then you send him back down. So I think they're going to give him every chance, but we're looking now. It's like, all right, we're borderline teetering on. He probably needs to be sent down to work on some things. It's just at this point, it's been a lot of struggles. Holiday's a really good player. He's going to be really good for a long time, but I think there is that chance that he might get sent down. So I wouldn't rule it out.
Yeah, no, it's definitely, I think, in play. Maybe not right now. I don't think it's happened like next couple of days, but yeah, it's been a rough go for Jackson Holiday. And even Langford hasn't been this bad, but Langford's been very kind of meh so far too. And obviously these guys are still, like, my long-term opinion on these two have not changed one bit, but yeah, I think people expected a little bit more out of each of these guys so far. I think it's safe to say. Going over to a surprise pitching breakouts, maybe not breakouts, not the right word, but a pop-up here over the last week or so. That's Mitchell Parker here, who's had two very good outings to start his career against the Dodgers and the Astros. And you know, today on Sunday, blanked the Astros over seven innings, only allowed three hits, no walks, eight strikeouts. This is his debut against the Dodgers earlier in the week. Went four-seam curveball splitter, had a 29% whiff rate, 36% CSW. Fastball doesn't overpower at 91.9 on average. Curveball about 10 miles an hour below that. Splitter in the mid-80s. This is a guy that did have some hype a couple different times in the minor leagues. Obviously, had a very tumultuous minor league career, up and down. The talent was definitely there. But do you think there's reason to buy in right now, Chris? Or would you be looking to maybe sell high given these first two starts?
It all depends. Like, he's honestly probably not rostered in a lot of leagues. Now, Parker is interesting because he had made some tweaks down the stretch last year that it had paid off for him. When you look at, you know, what he did to end 2023, it's like, all right, this is an interesting guy. He wasn't, nobody expected him to come up and do this, but it was like, at least, all right, there may be some intrigue here with Mitchell Parker, and he's really looked the part. I will say that. And it's been impressive to watch, especially, I know the Astros have not been good this year, but to watch him against, I would say, still a good lineup, and against the Dodgers too, like, that was rather impressive. Now, I don't know. I think that there could be some legitimacy, but I'm not going to sit here and tell you that I think that he's going to continue to do this. Like, in from August forward last year, he did have a couple of, like, bad starts in the middle of there, like a 7 earned run outing and a 5 earned run outing right before that, which kind of skews things a bit. But he had a 13 strikeout start last August, and he had 4 more starts that were 8 or more strikeouts outside of that 13K one. So it seemed like there were some changes that were made because he wasn't always that big strikeout guy. And then you come out and you see the results so far, and it's like, all right, like, there's been a lot to like here. He's commanded the pitches really well, locating the fastball, locating the curveball down, throwing a couple splitters in there. Like, it's a pretty fun arsenal, and he gets a lot of extension that allows that 92 mile an hour fastball to play up. It's a 6'9" extension, which is big. But I will say, I don't think this is legit. Like, I think people are going to blow a lot of fab on him, and I'm honestly a little afraid, but we'll see what happens there. I'm probably not going all in on him personally, but I do think there's a pretty intriguing player here.
Yeah, I did put some bids in for him, but none that I feel confident that I'm going to win. I was like, oh, maybe just in case that people don't go super high on him, maybe I'll get him for cheap, but I doubt that. A couple of weeks I needed some pitching in, but I'm not a big, you know, believer in Mitchell Parker. I think he's a major league starter long term, but I think he's more like SP4, SP5 territory, can work back end. I won't even go, you know, mid-rotation upside on Parker. So, you know, in deeper leagues, fine. I think he's a decent target there. But if you're looking for an impact arm, I don't think it's going to be him. A couple more headlines here before we get into some debuts and some hot and cold prospects. These both from the minor leagues. The Padres announced that they're starting Leo DeVries in low A. We expected him to skip the DSL. They brought him stateside already during spring training. So we're like, all right, he's going to start in the complex, but nope. They're jumping him over the complex as well, doing a similar approach as they did last year with Ethan Salas. And obviously, Chris, DeVries, phenomenal talent, could be, I think we both had him top 10 or close to it in our future, our projected top prospect rankings episode that we did a month or two ago. But this is pretty aggressive by the Padres, jumping him two levels up to low A. Are you surprised? Are you concerned by this? What are your thoughts here?
I feel like I have a lot of mixed feelings on this because this is,
same.
I'm not surprised. Like this is AJ Preller. This is what he does. He does crazy things. We saw them get hyper aggressive with Ethan Salas last year, similar trajectory. DeVries is going to be 17 the entire year. He won't turn 18 until October, if I'm not mistaken, but he is going to be pretty much young age the entire year. So I think it's aggressive. He's polished, though. I will say, I think there's a lot of polish here in the profile. The reports from people that saw him in the spring really liked what they had seen. I'm not going to say he's come up and light the world on fire, but it is at least intriguing. It shows the Padres' hand of how they value him, and they think he can handle it. While it's aggressive, I think that it does speak to the kind of caliber player that we're talking about here. And I think Leo DeVries will probably be up, flying up prospect rankings for sure. If he handles it with just decent performance, yeah, stock's going to soar. And we've seen now, like, Ethan Salas was awesome last year, but he's hit some bumps in the road back in high A this year after reaching double A to end the year last year. So, yeah, I don't think they're probably get that aggressive with DeVries, but he is at least, it's going to be fun to watch. I've had him as a top 50 prospect. I don't think I'm going to change that based on just the call-up. It's a wait and see how he performs thing. But if we do see him perform, the data is legit for his age, then, yeah, I think there's a chance this is a top 10 prospect by season's end.
Maybe even by midseason. If he starts out hot there, you know, given the upside, given the buzz, given the aggressive promotion, Padres prospects always get a little bit of a bump. It feels like, yeah, I think you could see him, you know, maybe not top 10 by midseason, top 20, 25 for sure. And yeah, that talent is absolutely there. Like, this is a guy that has a very well-rounded skill set. Now, one tool doesn't really stand out, but a guy that could just be above average or better across the board offensively. And we'll see how much power and bulk he adds to his frame. There is some projection there, but yeah, I just don't understand why they pushed him past complex, past DSL, fine. I don't see any issue with that. Just, this feels a bit too aggressive, but hey, we'll see. It worked with Salas last year, and you did mention he's, you know, off to a slower start this season, but obviously a phenomenal talent in his own right. So we'll see. But yeah, definitely really excited to see how this goes for DeVries here over the next few months. But next one here, not a positive one to end this section of the show. Ricky Tiedemann had been put on the IL in AAA for elbow discomfort. He had an MRI, so we'll see what happens over the next few days and weeks with him. But, Chris, is it getting to the point where Tiedemann is just too risky? He's a pitcher. They're all risky. We know that, especially from this year. But is he too risky to invest in at this point? Because we've never really seen a prolonged period of success from Tiedemann. He's just been hurt off and on. In 2023, only made 15 starts, 44 innings. And this year, he's on the IL again after three starts with AAA Buffalo. And even when he has been there, there's been inconsistent performance. Yeah, the K's have always been there. You know, we know that. We know he can miss bats with the best of them. But there's been some command and control inconsistencies. Last year, the walk rate was around 12%. You know, this year, he had 8 walks and 18 innings. So again, over 10% there, even though he had 23 Ks in those 18 innings. At this point, it's too early to say you're out on Ricky Tiedemann, obviously. But is he someone that you're just not looking to target anymore, given the elevated risk and then the price tag that it would take to get him?
Yeah, he's certainly concerning. Injuries have long been concerning for Tiedemann. And yeah, he's electric when he's on the mound, but it's just, while you mentioned, I mean, he all pitchers are risky, but it feels like Tiedemann's ultra risky. He's like just more risky than most. And for that reason, yeah, I think I've had him in like my kind of like tier one, tier two of pitching prospects, like, you know, kind of top tier, but like Skeens has stood out above Skeens and Joke. But now it's, man, I don't know. You look at this profile and I just don't think that I can do it with the constant elbow shoulder struggles. He's going to take a hit for me in my prospect rankings. I'm not sure to where, to what extent, but I just have major fears about him. And I do think that he's too risky. So I'm rather out, and I've been out for a while. Like, I wanted to buy after the AFL. It's like, all right, he's throwing 75 pitches consistently. I want to buy in, but yeah, I don't think I can do it.
Yeah, and he's been one of the best pitchers I've ever seen live in terms of a talent level. Seen him live between AA and AFL, I think four times. Hard to remember at this point, but definitely it was at least three, maybe four or five. I can't remember. But the talent level obviously is there. There's nobody can question that. But yeah, I think the red flags almost outweigh the green flags at this point. Do you think, it might be hard to say, Chris, but do you think he's still a top 10 pitching prospect for you? I think he'll still be top 10 for me, but yeah, he's not in tier one anymore. That's just Skeens and Job. And then I'm questioning if he's even in tier two anymore. Tier two right now for me is going to be, it's Cade Horton. I think Andrew Painter's in that tier. You put Jared Jones up in that tier now, Robbie Snelling, but I think he's more down probably in the range of Mizzy Arousky, Christian Scott, Noble Meyer, Max Meyer, Waldrop, guys like that. So probably more of a tier three guy, probably still top 10, but probably in the 8 to 10 range for me now.
Yeah, that's where I'm looking at him too. I think that the Mizzy Arousky comparison is a perfect fit for him. I have them back to back currently in my rankings. I do think that's a fair spot where it's a lot of upside, also a lot of risk. Scott's a much safer one kind of in that range, but yeah, he's like post 50 overall for me at this point.
Yep.
And same. Yeah, I think that number you mentioned, like back end top 10 overall, I don't know. Like, I look at other guys, like, I don't want to shove. There's just nobody that I'm like super, super comfortable with shoving that high yet. Where it's okay, this guy is now way above him. I'm not there, but I do think that minor drop is important here. So I think that's a fair range for Tiedemann.
Yeah, and he's going to hopefully, if this turns into a long-term injury, if he's out for the rest of the year or whatever, he'll probably drop even further. He has to at this point, unfortunately. Talent's there, but the rest of the profile is big red flag right now. All right, moving over to some debuts. We had three notable debuts over the last week. We had Jonathan Clase with the Seattle Mariners, Andy Páez with the Dodgers, and Jack Leiter with the Texas Rangers, who's already back down, but we'll talk about him here as well. Let's start with Clase. 4 for 16 so far, has a steal in his four games here with Seattle. Was pretty hot to start the year. 311, 396, 622 slash in 12 games with AAA Tacoma. Had 8 extra base hits, 2 home runs, 3 steals, 7 walks to 12 strikeouts, which I think is, you know, really key there. Like, we knew there was a little bit of pop in the profile. We obviously know he's been a phenomenal runner. That steals a ton of bags, 55 in 2022, 79 last season, only caught 15 times. We know he can draw walks as well, but, you know, K rate really was an issue last year. 165 Ks in 129 games. This year, the 12 and 53 plate appearances so far in AAA before he got called up, 5 and 4 games with Seattle so far. Small sample size, but has your opinion on Class A change at all this year, Chris, or is that sample size just too small for you right now?
It's too small. I think that Class A kind of is what he is. He's a speed guy. Yeah, I don't think the power is legit as the home run total says. He's hitting hitter-friendly environments the last couple of years, which has really boosted the home run totals. I think he's, like, fine. I think that the contact skills are still in question. I know early on the contact rates were looking pretty good. Like, those numbers were all right, and this is pretty solid. But I do think that there is still some question marks about the kind of contact he'll make against major league pitching. So I think that Class A is fine if you have the expectations. I think some have very high expectations. You're going to be a big power speed guy. I'm just not high on that power at all personally. So, yeah, he'll give you a lot of stolen bases. he may give you a decent batting average, but I'm not expecting much in the BA department or the power department either.
Yeah, that speed is obviously going to be the impact there. But if he can just hit like 250 with 10 and 12 home runs a year, I think he'll be a solid asset. Can he get there? That's still a question mark for him. The other hitter here, Andy Páez, who has started all five games for the Dodgers since being called up earlier in the week. Three of those came in right, two in center, so it's nice to see him starting regularly. And the Dodgers like to go platoons here. You see a lot of platoons of them with Rojas, Taylor, Hernandez, Lux, Outman, etc. And the fact that they've started Páez, both lefties and righties, and all five games overall is very encouraging. Got his first home run in Sunday's game here. One home run in 20 plate appearances, four hits, scored five runs so far. Obviously still very early, but you know, a guy that we were both talking about positively this offseason, this earlier on in spring training this year. What is your short-term and long-term outlook for Páez, Chris? Like, what can fantasy managers expect from him this season and then long-term as well?
Páez is legit. He is a very talented player. And I think that had he stayed healthy all of last year, he would have been a top 25 prospect. There's no doubt in my mind, because he had made some really impressive changes and they were paying off early. Like, he was looking really good. The contact rates made substantial jumps last year, like running 80% overall contact rates. He cut 25 pounds before 2023 season, and he was looking more athletic in the field. He was moving better. He was hitting the ball harder. The power just comes so easy here. He's very selective. He's going to run high OBPs. He was certainly on that trajectory, and he was somebody that I was buying this offseason just because he was a forgotten man, just because he was hurt a lot of last year. And the fact that he's come back from a torn labrum, like, that's a major surgery for hitters. And you often wonder, like, how is the labrum going to be? How's the shoulder going to be coming back from that kind of surgery? And he's continued to put up the big power. He's held the consistent contact. I think that Páez is, he's legit. And the Dodgers give him every chance to start. He has played every day since being called up, which I think is a pretty big vote of confidence from the Dodgers, who don't typically do that with all their young players. I think Páez is going to be a big power bat with high OBPs and respectable batting averages for a really long time. I'm rather in here and excited to see what he does even this year. I think that obviously a lot of prospects have come up and struggled, and I'm not going to say that he's going to be struggle. He may not. It's hard to say, but I am looking forward to watching him play this year and think that there is a lot to like in this profile.
Yeah, a lot of fab runs in about 45 minutes from now. It's 9:14 p.m. Eastern time right now, so NFBC runs in about 45 minutes. A lot of other dynasty leagues and, you know, other fab leagues in general probably run at midnight or 3 a.m. By the time everyone's listening to this, fab will have run for every league, and it'll be interesting to see what he goes for. Probably go for a pretty solid price tag. And yeah, I think there's a lot of legitimacy here with what Páez has done both last year and when he was healthy and on the field, and this year in the minor leagues as well. Yeah, I think there's a potential 70 hitter here, 25 to 30 home runs, maybe even gives you a few steals here and there. But yeah, I think he'll be a pretty solid corner outfielder for the Dodgers. But he's going to have to hit, obviously, because, you know, they have so many, you know, other names here. I mean, James Outman's struggled a lot. He could get hot again. We saw that last year. We saw that in spring training with him. So, you know, Páez will need to hit, but definitely has plenty of upside here. Last debut, this one over on the pitching side, we get Jack Leiter, who got lit up, 7 earned and 3 2/3, and then gets sent right back down to AAA. My thought process on Leiter isn't going to change because of that one start, but I've been still a bit hesitant to rank him too highly. I think I'm still lower than most with my prospect ranking of him. Like, I don't have him top 100 right now. I think maybe most have him either in the back end of it or close to it. He's more on the 150 range for me right now, which has gone up. He dropped a ton last year, but, and once he came back from injury, he missed about a month and a half, most of July and August, came back, last five starts, only walked six batters in 19 2/3 innings, which is a far cry from the walk rates he had put up in the minor leagues before that. So that was really the big issue with him. was way too many walks. I mean, but Chris, are you a believer that the lighter we saw at the end of last year for those five starts and then the first few starts of this year when he only had three walks in 14 and a third innings, are you confident that the command and control issues that we saw from Leiter over the last couple of years, even dating back to his days at Vanderbilt, like people forget the walk rate was pretty high at Vanderbilt as well back in 2021. Are you confident in the kind of new look Leiter that we've seen, and would you be willing to invest in him in dynasty leagues right now?
I think so, depending on the cost. I think that people are so all over the board. Like, it's like up and down, like down on Leiter, and then he comes back this year. So, oh my gosh, this is the next coming of Steven Strasburg. And people didn't really say that. That's the vibe that people give off with prospects, is it's like just riding a roller coaster. You're up 1 minute, you're down the next minute. And I don't really know where Leiter's value falls, especially after that start. It's hard to gauge, like, all right, how do people feel about Jack Leiter right now? I think in a general sense, he's going to be fine, but I do think there's reliever risk. Even now, I think there's still reliever risk with Leiter. I know people think that the changes are legit. I still have questions, and I don't know. Is he going to be a great starter long-term? The book's still out, in my opinion. But right now, I don't know. He's an okay buy, but I think you have to have the expectations in check and know that he's probably not going to be a high-end starting pitcher. He's probably not going to be a, you know, SP2 even. But if he's a mid-rotation guy, I think that you should be happy, because that would be a really solid outcome at this point, in my opinion. There's going to be bumps in the road, but at the end of the day, I think that Leiter can be good, but he's still got some things to work on.
Yeah, my thought on Leiter is kind of actually close to what I've been saying about Kyle Harrison, where we know there's some talent there. He can miss bats like Harrison has, but I think there's going to be a lot of inconsistencies. I think the command is still an issue, even though the walk rate dropped down, as I mentioned, end of last year and then the start of this year. He's still getting up a lot of home runs. Had six earned runs allowed in those three starts to start the year for Triple-A Round Rock. Four of those were via home run. He gave up four home runs there, 16 last year. So if you combine 2023 and then the start of 2024, 99 and a third innings, 20 home runs allowed. That's a lot for 99 and a third innings. You know, double that, 199 innings, 40 home runs. Like, that puts it in perspective. That is a lot of home runs. So yeah, I think you're going to see a lot of inconsistencies, probably ratios will be a little bit higher, you know, kind of like what Harrison's been so far this year. Give you a good K rate. We know he can miss bats. He always has. But yeah, I'm still a bit hesitant to, you know, really buy into, you know, a guy like Jack Leiter right now. All right, let's go over to some hot and cold prospects here. This is I think a new segment we're going to do every week called Three Up, Three Down, where we'll discuss self-explanatory. Three hitters that are hot right now in the minor leagues, three that are not. We'll alternate hitters 1 week, pitchers the next week. So we'll start with hitters this week. The first up here is Aroldis Martinez. The Toronto Blue Jays at the major level have been a pretty stagnant offense for most of the year, but in the minor leagues, there's been a lot of hot hitters for them, and Aroldis Martinez is right at the forefront of that. Went yard six times this week. Really been flexing the power early and often this season for Triple-A Buffalo. Overall, in six home runs, 15 RBI in 18 games. Slash line of 328, 384, 657. It's still not like a clear-cut opening for him right now, Chris, but, you know, he's been very impressed so far. And as someone that's been a bit lower on Aroldis than most, one thing I kept, you know, preaching over and over again mostly last year was I want to see him hit for average and power at the same time for a prolonged time. And yeah, it's only been 18 games so far, but yeah, he's doing that right now. And he's definitely shooting up prospect rankings. He's back inside my top 100. I'm sure he's higher for you, but when do you think we see him, and kind of what are your expectations for him moving forward?
Yeah, he's looked legit. I think that he's consistently made gains to raise his floor. Like, he's always had a really high ceiling, but now we're looking at Martinez saying, okay, the floor is a little higher here, which is a huge thing. And I think that there's some intrigue here as far as, like, All right, now he has proximity on his side. He's got the power upside going for him. Yeah, I look at this profile and think, all right, this is a pretty fun player that's going to be up in the next couple of weeks, because things aren't looking so hot for the Blue Jays infielders currently. Obviously, they got Bo and Vlad, but other than that, they're rolling out Kevin Biggio and Isaiah Kiner-Falefa right now in the bottom of that lineup, and neither have been good. Kiner-Falefa has at least been serviceable, hitting 259, but overall, it's not really been great. I don't think that Isaiah Kiner-Falefa is blocking anybody, getting tongue-tied on that name there. And Biggio, just every time he shows some signs, like, yeah, he's getting on base at a high clip, but he's striking out still 33% of the time. It's like pretty much like a strikeout or a walk, which is crazy. I don't know. I don't think either of these guys are going to block Orelbis Martinez from coming up. I don't think they're going to block Addison Barger from coming up either, who's also been really good. I like Orelbis Martinez a lot. I think he's a top 50 prospect at this point for me, given the power, given the contact improvements that I've seen, just given the higher floor. And I know it feels like that Orelbis Martinez has been a prospect forever at this point, but he's just 22 years old. He'll spend the entire season as a 22-year-old. I don't know. I'm just pretty intrigued by what he's done and what he brings to the table. He's got a good bit of AAA experience at this point. Now we're talking near 75 games in AAA, which is a pretty solid sample size. And he looks the part. He's performed well against good competition. I think I'm in, and I think he's up in the next couple of weeks.
Yeah. And no worry. I all the time butcher Isaiah Kiner-Falefa, especially typing it.
Yeah.
Especially typing. I always try to add other letters in there, like the Falefa part. I always try to put like an extra F or an L or whatever. Yeah, that's a hard name to both say and type. So I definitely get you there. And yeah, again, I've been one that's been lower on Rolvis. I'm definitely coming around to him. He's showing, doing what I wanted to see from him, which is very encouraging to see. And yeah, this is a guy that I've seen live a ton when he came through AA. You know, never questioned the power, never once questioned the power, but he had that trade off where he was trying to make more contact and wasn't hitting for much power. So I just want to see that kind of middle ground from him, and he's there. He's at the point where he's doing both consistently now, and yeah, I think he's one that's going to be up pretty soon. Maybe not this month. If he's not up by the end of May, I would be absolutely shocked. The first down here, we got Drew Jones, former number two overall pick back in 2022. Chris, remember the debate between him and Jackson Holliday from that draft? And obviously one is, well, struggling in the majors, still in the majors, and the other one is now struggling mightily down in low A in the California League. In 11 games, Drew Jones has struck out 26 times, slashing 171, 271, 268, has yet to hit a home run this season, and 26 strikeouts in 49 plate appearances, so a K rate of around 52% right now. It's a lot of games. I'm not trying to go crazy here, but he hasn't really done much in way of adding power so far. And again, he's 52 games in his career, so I'm not trying to over, dramatize this. That's still a question mark, was how much power will Drew Jones bring? He's a great defensive center fielder. He's an elite runner. He has that going for him. He's a big-time athlete, just like his father was. But the bat right now is a major question mark, and he's been steadily falling down my rankings here. Really, last year a little bit, this year a little bit more, to the point right now where I have him, let's see, where I have him, currently 156. He was 108 back in spring, so about a 50-spot drop here. And if he doesn't start correcting some of these issues, I think he's going to probably be outside my top 200 sooner rather than later. But are you, how concerned are you right now with Jones, Chris, and where does he slot into your rankings?
I'm majorly concerned. I think that Jones is teetering on just falling completely off the board, which is scary. Like, I thought he would make swing adjustments, but he hasn't at all. The swing is horrifically bad. Like, he can't, he's one, he's not making contact. And two, when he's making contact, it's ground balls galore. His swing has zero loft in it at all. So that's obviously a concern. It's not good. And I know Reese White at Prospects Live saw him the first week a couple of times, and he said it was very ugly to watch. So Reese seeing that and reporting that back, like, that's not very good. I'm highly concerned about Drew Jones. I think he's going to be outside my top 250 when I update this week, but we'll see. I'm rather out two feet out the door for sure, in my opinion.
Oh, well, so you're even more concerned than I am right now. He's outside your top 250, but yeah, it's definitely looking pretty hairy right now for Drew Jones. And yeah, he's going to need to start showing some improvements at the plate soon, or yeah, his drop is going to be even more drastic than it already has been this season. The next up here, Carson Williams, a guy we saw out in the AFL. We filmed the interview of him for the CBS guys, Welsh and Frank Stanfill. Seemed like a really good guy, good head on his shoulders, obviously, and a lot of talent as well. And he's been off to a really hot start to the season so far this year, hitting for average, hitting for power, stealing bases, and just doing it all so far. I'll try to pull up his stats here. But yeah, again, it's been a very good all-around showing from him offensively. And I think he's potentially a top 20 fantasy prospect right now. And after that kind of top 12, 13 or so, I think the rankings really open up. And I think he's in consideration for that tier of rankings right now. I look at so far in 11 games, 426, 471, 745, 9 extra base hits, 3 home runs, 4 steals, 3 walks to 11 Ks. Obviously, the power speed is there. You could go maybe plus on both of those. But the concern is still how much contact will he make? Can he keep the K rate in check? Had 147 strikeouts last year in just 105 games. But the upside is a 20-plus guy. That could be up at some point this summer for the Tampa Bay Rays, especially if they keep having inconsistencies in their infield as they've had so far this season, both with injuries and performance. But how high is Williams right now in your rankings, Chris? And what are your thoughts on what you've seen from him so far this year?
Yeah, I was like overly high on Williams last year after seeing him early. I had him as a top 20 prospect last year. And then I dropped him a bit after some of the swing and miss concerns against breaking balls in the AFL and some of the data that I got. It was just like, ooh, can't hit a breaking ball, getting a heavy dose of breaking balls, not good. And so I dropped him to like the 40 range, 40 to 50 range. But I think now I think probably back up to 25 because I did see that I saw him in spring training several times on the backfields. And he did look improved. Like he looked like a little bit of a different hitter. He was showing improved contact, in my opinion. And all right, maybe there has been some changes made. And so far, so good. Like it's looked really good to watch him take that step forward that he needed to take. And I think that was really the biggest thing. And he's done it. And he talked about that. Like some of the things that really stood out to me, it was like, all right, when he was talking, he didn't really beat himself up about these things. He's like, these things are things I work on and they're going to work themselves out. If I put in the work, it's going to happen eventually. And I think that now you're seeing a mature player coming around. He's still young and he's been older for like pretty much every level that he's been at. So when I look at Carson Williams, like, all right, I think that already an elite glove, good power, good speed, very toolsy type player who's still 20 years old, by the way. Yep. And we saw him get to AAA last year. I know it's circumstantial, given the Wander stuff, given that he was nearby to be able to go to Durham. I got it. But now in AA, looking really good as a 20-year-old, I really like the strides that I've seen from him this year.
Yeah, as have I actually have him. I was looking where I have him. I have him 19 right now, back-to-back with Adiel Amador. He's off to a bit of a slower start this year, outside of stealing a ton of bags so far and walking a lot. But yeah, Williams is right in that tier. And there's a glutton with like him and Walker Jenkins, Matt Shaw, Samuel Basayo, Spencer Jones, Roman Anthony, guys like that. And who would you rather have right now, Chris? Carson Williams or Adiel Amador?
Definitely Williams. I think Amador showing his fatal flaws right now is that he hits the ball on the ground too much. And I just look at the history of players like this that have had really good contact coming up, it couldn't lift the ball. And it's not been good results, honestly. I think I'm actually, I was way too high on Amador, and I think I'm making a substantial drop on him because the contact rates, while they're really good, the ground ball rates are really ugly. And I think that hitters have a really hard time changing their swing to get to loft. So from that standpoint, yeah, I'm really concerned with Amador. I think Amador is taking a big hit for me outside of my top 50. So I'm rather out on him, actually.
Interesting. Yeah. I still like Amador. Those concerns are absolutely legit. And he had dropped a little bit for me, but I'm holding him. I'm not trying to go too big of a drop quite yet. But yeah, if he doesn't turn this around, then yeah, my next drop with him will be a bit bigger. Now, what about, it's actually not a lot of shortstops in this range of my rankings, actually. What about Williams or a guy like Matt Shaw? Who you take there?
I still have Matt Shaw just slightly ahead.
Yeah, same here.
Shaw is just a, he's just so consistent and good. It's like he's, I don't think he's going to be flashy, but I think he's going to be a consistent guy that gets on base, it's for contact, gives you power and speed. And every year you're like, man, this guy just did it. And
yep. Yeah,
I think that we'll see some really good performances from Shaw. So I'm very excited about what Shaw brings to the table.
Yeah, I have Shaw a handful of spots higher, and he's off to a pretty good start to the year as well in double A's. But moving on here, again, there's not much other shortstops in my rankings here near him, so we'll call it good there. Move on to the next down. Pete Crow Armstrong off to a really tough start to the season in Triple A Iowa. 203, 244, 405. Yeah, he does have two home runs and five steals, but three walks to 24 strikeouts, and a lot of those strikeouts have come lately here. And came up last year, didn't really do much in 19 plate appearances. Actually didn't do anything, didn't have any hits in those 19 plate appearances. And the tough start this year, only walked three times at 24 Ks. And he's a guy that I've dropped a bit here. He was in my top 20. I've dropped him now down. He's 37 at the moment here, so still top 50 for me, but I definitely have some concerns about what I've seen from him in terms of his approach right now. And it's not like he ever had the phenomenal approach. It was fine. You know, walk rate last year was around what, over 9%, you know, K rate about 26%. So those are fine, not worrisome. Been, again, this is a rough start at the plate for him this year with that approach. How concerned are you, Chris, and how far down your rank he's fallen?
Yeah, he's a tough one for me. When I look at Pete Crow Armstrong, like, I don't know. He's tough because he plays really good center field. Like, he's going to be in the lineup once he gets back up. But there's always been like the major question marks about contact, like how much contact would he make? And these have been question marks for a long time. Like, his data has always been very questionable in that department. And this year, it's much of the same. Unfortunately, running contact rates near 70%, which is just borderline not great. I know the results haven't been great overall this year. He's not going to be a guy that we're going to see, I don't think, take like too many walks. Like, he's posted decent walk rates in the past, but I think that the aggressiveness is going to catch up to him, actually, and it's going to expose him a bit. He's got speed. He's going to steal bases. The power is actually respectable here. I think that he has more power than people think. But in general, I think PCA is a much better real-life prospect than a fantasy prospect. And so I do have my concerns because there's just not been the consistency I want to see with the contact. And for that reason, I do think that he's, I think I'm like in the 40 to 50 range right now for fantasy. And I'm still questioning, like, is that a good spot for him or not? And I don't know.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm questioning if I'm still too high on him. But again, try not to go too big of a drop for him so far because he did have a pretty good year last year. So don't want to overreact too much to this early sample size, but yeah, definitely concerned. And yeah, I think he's now, you know, approaching maybe being out of my top 50 by either this update or the next update for sure, if this doesn't turn around. All right, one more up and down here. The third up, Cam Collier, still only 19 years old. It feels like he should be older than that, but still only 19, won't even turn 20. Until after the season ends in mid-November. He's off to a really hot start this year. Last year, he had six home runs in 111 games for low-A Daytona. This year, going up to high-A Dayton, so same name, just take the A off there, already has six home runs in 13 games with a 333, 357, 704 slash there. the power has long been the question on Collier, getting back to the draft a couple of years ago. And people were very split on what they thought his future power projection was. And it's only 13 games, but Chris, so far this year, Cam Collier is really good, and he's hitting the ball really hard right now.
Yeah, he's a ton of fun. He had really good data last year too, which I think that we saw people concerned about the performance last year, but everything looked really good under the hood, minus that he just hit the ball on the ground too much. I think that his ninth percentile EV last year was like in the 105 range. I would need to pull it up to confirm, but that's really good power for his age. And yep. Remember that he reclassified in the draft. So technically, he should have been in last summer's draft class. Oh, and he was playing JUCO ball at 17 years old at Chipola, which is a really good JUCO. Yeah, I think that, in my opinion, the biggest question surrounding Collier was never the power. It was more, could he get enough lift? And where was the athleticism? Because this is a pretty limited profile. Maybe he sticks at third base, but it might be first base. I don't know. I think that there's still questions whether he can play third base long-term or not. But the power is certainly there. He hit the ball extremely hard last year. It was just pounded onto the ground. There's good plate skills. I thought the contact was respectable. And this year, obviously, he's getting a little more lift. There's still ground ball concerns, I'll say. Ground ball rate's sitting at 48%. So that's certainly something to watch out for. But he is hitting more fly balls, and he's hitting them with authority, and they're leaving the yard. So I am certainly intrigued by Collier. I think he's a good prospect. But I think you have to know there's pressure on the bat because he might be a first baseman. Like, the glove's just is fine. I don't think it's good. And I don't know if he sticks to third base long term. So I think those question marks still need to be answered there.
Yeah, no, for sure. But good start to the season. Definitely one that's rising up rankings right now and still feels a bit underrated to me. So still a pretty solid dynasty target for sure. The last down, it's actually a pair. We figured we group them together because they're both off to terrible starts to the season. That's Christian Vaquero and Elijah Green, both playing in low A Fredericksburg. And if you're anywhere in the Fredericksburg, Virginia area, the surrounding DC area, you've probably felt a lot of breeze lately, a lot of wind. That's due to Vaquero and Green just swinging and missing and absolutely everything. So far, Vaquero in 53 plate appearances, 149, 245, 319 slash. Elijah Green in 56 plate appearances, 174, 309, 283. That's not even, the slash line's not even the worst part for these two because Vaquero's K rate currently is 50.9% and Elijah Green 48.2%. Yeah, it's Green's already had the huge K rate last year, but this is a new issue for Vaquero. Green at this point is questionable to even stay in my 500. He might, but it'd be like in a 450 range or something like that because he just hasn't shown any improvements whatsoever with that approach. Even though he had all the raw tools, he hasn't been able to translate that. And Vaquero, I'll still have him probably top 250-ish, but he's definitely dropping a good amount. I think I had him like 125-ish to start the season, but this is very concerning here, and he's been underwhelming as well. So both are very young, 19 for Vaquero, 20 for Green, but this type of K-rate issue is very concerning for me for sure. But Chris, what are your thoughts here? Do you think there's any reason to still be in on either of these two guys?
Nope. I had Vaquero 399 before the season, and I just moved him to 700. Elijah Green, I had at 236. I think I'm going to drop him to maybe Vaquero's spot at 399. How about that? I just don't think that either of these guys at this point, like when you can't make contact at the lower levels, like that's majorly concerning to me. And I think that I'm just out. Last year, these guys were making contact rates in the 50% range, which is horrifically bad. Like, I worry about players that make contact at 65% clips. And you had Elijah Green making contact at, I want to confirm, but it was like a 56% rate, if I'm not mistaken, which is horrifically, but 54.5, I was even wrong on that. So that's very bad. This year, the strikeout rates tell you everything you need to know. The contact rates are not good either. Let's look up both of these and see where they are at. I'm just going to guess that it's in the 50s range. And if so, it just tells me, like, I don't want anything to do with either of them. But let me, Elijah Green's at 53.8 right now. And Vaquero, I bet he's probably even lower.
Yeah, he may be even the high 40s.
He's at 53. So they're right at the same spot pretty much. But yeah, when you can't make contact at those levels, I don't think that can improve enough to be a relevant prospect, unfortunately. And both of these guys have tools. Both these guys have athleticism, but man, it's tough to watch just the contact and just how bad it is. So yeah, I'm pretty out.
Yeah. I was still holding on hope with Vaquero. I mean, he had a good OBP last year, stole some bags, but yeah, I'm probably still ranking him too highly. I got to dig in further, but yeah, it's been absolutely terrible for both these guys. And yeah, I'm pretty out on both of them as well. But that is going to wrap up this episode here, episode 300 in the books. Thanks, as usual, to all the listeners for tuning in. Again, this episode, we hope you enjoyed it. We'll get 300 more episodes out before we know it. We'll be at episode 600 in the next couple of years. Make sure you check out both of our personal platforms and everything going on over at RotoBaller. And we'll be back with you again later this week. But until then, everyone take care.
If you work as a manufacturing facilities engineer, installing a new piece of equipment can be as complex as the machinery itself. From prep work to alignment and testing, it's your team's job to put it all together. That's why it's good to have Grainger on your side. With industrial-grade products and next-day delivery, Grainger helps ensure you have everything you need close at hand through every step of the installation. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done. If you work as a manufacturing facilities engineer, installing a new piece of equipment can be as complex as the machinery itself. From prep work to alignment and testing, it's your team's job to put it all together. That's why it's good to have Grainger on your side. With industrial-grade products and next-day delivery, Grainger helps ensure you have everything you need close at hand through every step of the installation. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.